Chapter 10. Again, Visalia. 40. It was as though a hyperwave drama had come to a halt in a holographic still. None of the robots moved, of course, but neither did Bailey and neither did Dr. Visalia Aliena. Long seconds, abnormally long ones, passed before Visalia let out her breath and, very slowly, rose to her feet. Her face had tightened itself into a humorless smile, and her voice was low. "You are saying, Earthman, that I am an accessory in the destruction of the humaniform robot?" Bailey said, "Something of the sort had occurred to me, Doctor." "Thank you for the thought. The interview is over, and you will leave." She pointed to the door. Bailey said, "I'm afraid I do not wish to." "I don't consult your wishes, Earthman."
"You must, for how can you make me leave against my wishes?"
"I have robots who, at my request, will put you out politely but firmly and without hurting anything but your self-esteem, if you have any."
"You have but one robot here."
"I have two that will not allow that to happen."
"I have 20 on instant call."
Bailey said, "Dr. Visalia, please understand. You were surprised at seeing Daniil. I suspect that even though you work at the Robotics Institute, where humaniform robots are the first order of business, you have never actually seen a completed and functioning one. Your robots, therefore, haven't seen one either. Now look at Daniil. He looks human. He looks more human than any robot who has ever existed, except for the dead Jander. To your robots, Daniil will surely look human. He will know how to present an order in such a way that they will obey him in preference, perhaps, to you."
Visalia said, "I can, if necessary, summon 20 human beings from within the Institute who will put you out, perhaps with a little damage, and your robots, even Daniil, will not be able to interfere effectively."
"How do you intend to call them, since my robots are not going to allow you to move? They have extraordinarily quick reflexes."
Visalia showed her teeth in something that could not be called a smile. "I cannot speak for Daniil, but I've known Giscard for most of my life. I don't think he will do anything to keep me from summoning help, and I imagine he will keep Daniil from interfering, too."
Bailey tried to keep his voice from trembling as he skated on ever thinner ice and knew it. He said, "Before you do anything, perhaps you might ask Giscard what he will do if you and I give conflicting orders."
"Giscard?" said Visalia with supreme confidence.
Giscard's eyes turned full on Visalia, and he said, with an odd timbre to his voice, "Little miss, I am compelled to protect Mr. Bailey. He takes precedence."
"Indeed? By whose order? By this Earthman's, the stranger's?"
Giscard said, "By Dr. Han Fastolf's order." Visalia's eyes flashed, and she slowly sat down on the stool again. Her hands, resting in her lap, trembled, and she said, through lips that scarcely moved,
"He's even taken you away."
"If that is not enough, Dr. Visalia," said Daniil, speaking suddenly, of his own accord, "I too would place partner Elijah's welfare above yours."
Visalia looked at Daniil with bitter curiosity. "Partner Elijah, is that what you call him?"
"Yes, Dr. Visalia. My choice in this matter, the Earthman over you, arises not only out of Dr. Fastolf's instructions, but because the Earthman and I are partners in this investigation, and because..."
Daniil paused as though puzzled by what he was about to say, and then said it anyway.
"We are friends."
Visalia said, "Friends? An Earthman and a humaniform robot? Well, there is a match. Neither quite human." Bailey said sharply, "Nevertheless, bound by friendship. Do not, for your own sake, test the force of our..." Now it was he who paused, and, as though to his own surprise, completed the sentence impossibly, "love."
Visalia turned to Bailey. "What do you want?"
"Information. I have been called to Aurora, this world of the dawn, to straighten out an event that does not seem to have an easy explanation, one in which Dr. Fastolf stands falsely accused, with the possibility, therefore, of terrible consequences for your world and mine. Daniil and Giscard understand this situation well and know that nothing but the first law, at its fullest and most immediate, can take precedence over my efforts to solve the mystery. Since they have heard what I have said and know that you might possibly be an accessory to the deed, they understand that they must not allow this interview to end. Therefore, I say again, don't risk the actions they may be forced to take if you refuse to answer my questions. I have accused you of being an accessory in the murder of Jander Panel. Do you deny that accusation or not? You must answer."
Visalia said bitterly, "I will answer. Never fear. Murder? A robot is put out of commission, and that's murder? Well, I do deny it, murder or whatever. I deny it with all possible force. I have not given Gramianus information on robotics for the purpose of allowing him to put an end to Jander. I don't know enough to do so, and I suspect that no one else at the Institute knows enough. Bailey said, I can't say whether you know enough to have helped commit the crime or whether anyone at the Institute knows enough. We can, however, discuss motive. First, you might have a feeling of tenderness for this Gramianus. However much you might reject his offers, however contemptible you might find him as a possible lover, would it be so strange that you would feel flattered by his persistence? Sufficiently so to be willing to help him if he turned to you prayerfully and without any sexual demands with which to annoy you? You mean he may have come to me and said, Vasilia, dear, I want to put a robot out of commission. Please tell me how to do it, and I will be terribly grateful to you. And I would say, why, certainly, dear, I would just love to help you commit a crime. Preposterous! No one except an Earthman who knows nothing of Auroran ways could believe anything like this could happen. It would take a particularly stupid Earthman, too. Perhaps. But all possibilities must be considered. For instance, as a second possibility, might you yourself not be jealous over the fact that Gramianus has switched his affections so that you might help him not out of abstract tenderness, but out of a very concrete desire to win him back? Jealous? That is an earthly emotion. If I do not wish Gramianus for myself, how can I possibly care whether he offers himself to another woman and she accepts, or for that matter, if another woman offers herself to him and he accepts? I have been told before that sexual jealousy is unknown on Aurora, and I am willing to admit that is true in theory. But such theories rarely hold up in practice. There are surely some exceptions. What's more, jealousy is all too often an irrational emotion and not to be dismissed by mere logic. Still, let us leave that for the moment. As a third possibility, you might be jealous of Gladia and wish to do her harm, even if you don't care the least bit for Gramianus yourself. Jealous of Gladia? I've never even seen her, except once on the hyperwave when she arrived in Aurora. The fact that people have commented on her resemblance to me every once in a long while hasn't bothered me. Does it perhaps bother you that she is Dr. Fastolf's ward, his favorite, almost the daughter that you were once? She has replaced you. She is welcome to that. I could not care less. Even if they were lovers? Vasilia stared at Bailey with growing fury, and beads of perspiration appeared at her hairline. She said, There is no need to discuss this. You have asked me to deny the allegation that I was accessory to what you call murder, and I have denied it. I have said I lacked the ability and I lacked the motive. You are welcome to present your case to all Aurora. Present your foolish attempts at supplying me with a motive. Maintain, if you wish, that I have the ability to do so. You will get nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And even while she trembled with anger, it seemed to Bailey that there was conviction in her voice. She did not fear the accusation. She had agreed to see him. So he was on the track of something that she feared, perhaps feared desperately. But she did not fear this. Where, then, had he gone wrong? 41. Bailey said, troubled, casting about for some way out. Suppose I accept your statement, Dr. Vasilia. Suppose I agree that my suspicion that you might have been an accessory in this roboticide was wrong. Even that would not mean that it is impossible for you to help me. Why should I help you? Bailey said, out of human decency. Dr. Han Fastolf assures us he did not do it, that he is not a robot killer, that he did not put this particular robot, Jander, out of operation. You've known Dr. Fastolf better than anyone ever has, one would suppose. You spent years in an intimate relationship with him as a beloved child and growing daughter. You saw him at times and under conditions that no one else saw him. Whatever your present feelings toward him might be, the past is not changed by them. Knowing him as you do, you must be able to bear witness that his character is such that he could not harm a robot, certainly not a robot that is one of his supreme achievements. Would you be willing to bear such witness openly? To all the worlds? It would help a great deal. Vasilia's face seemed to harden. Understand me, she said, pronouncing the words distinctly. I will not be involved. You must be involved. Why? Do you owe nothing to your father? He is your father. Whether the word means anything to you or not, there is a biological connection.
And besides that, father or not, he took care of you, nurtured and brought you up for years. You owe him something for that.
Vasilia trembled. It was a visible shaking, and her teeth were chattering. She tried to speak, failed, took a deep breath, another, then tried again. She said, "Giscard, do you hear all that is going on?" Giscard bowed his head. "Yes, little miss." "And you, the humaniform, Daniil?" "Yes, Dr. Vasilia." "You hear all this, too?" "Yes, Dr. Vasilia." "You both understand the Earthman insists that I bear evidence on Dr. Fastolf's character?" Both nodded. "Then I will speak. Against my will and in anger. It is because I have felt that I did owe this father of mine some minimum consideration as my gene-bearer and, after a fashion, my upbringer, that I have not borne witness. But now I will. Earthman, listen to me. Dr. Han Fastolf, some of whose genes I share, did not take care of me, as a separate, distinct human being. I was to him nothing more than an experiment, an observational phenomenon." Bailey shook his head.
"That is not what I was asking."
She drove furiously over him. "You insisted that I speak, and I will speak, and it will answer you. One thing interests Dr. Han Fastolf. One thing only. That is the functioning of the human brain. He wishes to reduce it to equations, to a writing diagram, to a solved maze, and thus found a mathematical science of human behavior which will allow him to predict the human future. He calls the science psychohistory. I can't believe that you have talked to him for as little as an hour without his mentioning it. It is the monomania that drives him." Vasilia searched Bailey's face and cried out in a fierce joy, "I can tell. He has talked to you about it. Then he must have told you that he is interested in robots only insofar as they can bring him to the human brain. He is interested in humaniform robots only insofar as they can bring him still closer to the human brain. Yes, he's told you that, too. The basic theory that made humaniform robots possible arose, I am quite certain, out of his attempt to understand the human brain, and he hugs that theory to himself and will allow no one else to see it because he wants to solve the problem of the human brain totally by himself in the 2 centuries or so he has left. Everything is subordinate to that, and that most certainly included me." Bailey, trying to breast his way against the flood of fury, said in a low voice, "In what way did it include you, Dr. Vasilia?" "When I was born, I should have been placed with others of my kind, with professionals who knew how to care for infants. I should not have been kept by myself in the charge of an amateur, father or not, scientist or not. Dr. Fastolf should not have been allowed to subject a child to such an environment, and would not, if he had been anyone else but Han Fastolf. He used all his prestige to bring it about, called in every debt he had, persuaded every key person he could, until he had control of me."
"He loved you," muttered Bailey.
"Loved me? Any other infant would have done as well, but no other infant was available. What he wanted was a growing child in his presence, a developing brain. He wanted to make a careful study of the method of its development, the fashion of its growth. He wanted a human brain in simple form, growing complex, so that he could study it in detail. For that purpose, he subjected me to an abnormal environment and a subtle experimentation with no consideration for me as a human being at all."
"I can't believe that. Even if he were interested in you as an experimental object, he could still care for you as a human being."
"No, you speak as an Earthman. Perhaps on Earth there is some sort of regard for biological connections. Here there is not. I was an experimental object to him, period."
"Even if that were so to start with, Dr. Fastolf couldn't help but learn to love you, a helpless object entrusted to his care. Even if there were no biological connection at all, even if you were an animal, let us say, he would have learned to love you."
"Oh, would he now?" she said bitterly. "You don't know the force of indifference in a man like Dr. Fastolf. If it would have advanced his knowledge to snuff out my life, he would have done so without hesitation."
"That is ridiculous, Dr. Vasilia. His treatment of you was so kind and considerate that it evoked love from you. I know that. You offered yourself to him."
"He told you that, did he?" "Yes, he would. Not for a moment, even today, would he stop to question whether such a revelation might not embarrass me."
Yes, I offered myself to him, and why not? He was the only human being I really knew. He was superficially gentle to me, and I didn't understand his true purposes. He was a natural target for me. Then, too, he saw to it that I was introduced to sexual stimulation under controlled conditions, the controls he set up. It was inevitable that eventually I would turn to him. I had to, for there was no one else. And he refused.
And you hated him for that?
No, not at first, not for years. Even though my sexual development was stunted and distorted, with effects I feel to this day, I did not blame him. I did not know enough. I found excuses for him. He was busy. He had others. He needed older women. You would be astonished at the ingenuity with which I uncovered reasons for his refusal. It was only years later that I became aware that something was wrong, and I managed to bring it out openly face to face. "Why did you refuse me?" I asked. "Obliging me might have put me on the right track, solved everything." She paused, swallowing, and for a moment covered her eyes. Bailey waited, frozen with embarrassment. The robots were expressionless, incapable, for all Bailey knew, of experiencing any balance or imbalance of the positronic pathways that would produce a sensation in any way analogous to human embarrassment. She said, calmer. He avoided the question for as long as he could, but I faced him with it over and over. "Why did you refuse me? Why did you refuse me?" He had no hesitation in engaging in sex. I knew of several occasions. I remember wondering if he simply preferred men. Where children are not involved, personal preference in such things is not of any importance, and some men can find women distasteful, or for that matter, vice versa. It was not so with this man you call my father, however. He enjoyed women, sometimes young women, as young as I was when I first offered myself. "Why did you refuse me?" He finally answered me, and you are welcome to guess what that answer was. She paused and waited sardonically. Bailey stirred uneasily and said in a mumble, "He didn't want to make love to his daughter." "Oh, don't be a fool. What difference does that make? Considering that hardly any man on Aurora knows who his daughter is, any man making love to any woman a few decades younger might be... But never mind, it's self-evident." What he answered, and oh, how I remember the words, was, "You great fool, if I involved myself with you in that manner, how could I maintain my objectivity, and of what use would my continuing study of you be?" By that time, you see, I knew of his interest in the human brain. I was even following in his footsteps and becoming a roboticist in my own right. I worked with Giscard in this direction and experimented with his programming. I did it very well, too, didn't I, Giscard? Giscard said, "So you did, little miss. But I could see that this man whom you call my father did not view me as a human being. He was willing to see me distorted for life rather than risk his objectivity. His observations meant more to him than my normality. From that time on, I knew what I was and what he was, and I left him." The silence hung heavy in the air. Bailey's head was throbbing slightly. He wanted to ask, "Could you not take into account the self-centeredness of a great scientist, the importance of a great problem? Could you make no allowances for something spoken perhaps in irritation at being forced to discuss what one did not want to discuss? Was not Vasilia's own anger just now much the same thing? Did not Vasilia's concentration on her own normality, whatever she meant by that, to the exclusion of perhaps the two most important problems facing humanity, the nature of the human brain and the settling of the galaxy, represent an equal self-centeredness with much less excuse?" But he could ask none of those things. He did not know how to put it so that it would make real sense to this woman, nor was he sure he would understand her if she answered. What was he doing on this world? He could not understand their ways, no matter how they explained, nor could they understand his. He said wearily, "I am sorry, Dr. Vasilia. I understand that you are angry, but if you would dismiss your anger for a moment and consider, instead, the matter of Dr. Fastoff and the murdered robot, could you not see that we are dealing with two different things? Dr. Fastoff might have wanted to observe you in a detached and objective way, even at the cost of your unhappiness, and yet be light years removed from the desire to destroy an advanced humaniform robot." Vasilia reddened. She shouted, "Don't you understand what I'm telling you, Earthman? Do you think I have told you what I have just told you because I think you or anyone would be interested in the sad story of my life? For that matter, do you think I enjoy revealing myself in this manner? I'm telling you this only to show you that Dr. Han Fastoff, my biological father, as you never tire of pointing out, did destroy Jander. Of course he did.
I have refrained from saying so because no one, until you, was idiot enough to ask me, and because of some foolish remnant of consideration I have for that man. But now that you have asked me, I say so, and by Aurora I will continue to say so, to anyone and everyone, publicly if necessary. Dr. Han Fastolf did destroy Jander Panel. I am certain of it. Does that satisfy you?
42. Bailey stared at the distraught woman in horror. He stuttered and began again.
I don't understand at all, Dr. Vasilia. Please quiet down and consider. Why should Dr. Fastolf destroy the robot? What has that to do with his treatment of you? Do you imagine it is some kind of retaliation against you?
Vasilia was breathing rapidly. Bailey noted absently and without conscious intention that although Vasilia was as small-boned as Gladia was, her breasts were larger, and she seemed to wrench at her voice to keep it under control. She said,
I told you, Earthman, did I not, that Han Fastolf was interested in observing the human brain? He did not hesitate to put it under stress in order to observe the results. And he preferred brains that were out of the ordinary, that of an infant, for instance, so that he might watch their development. Any brain but a commonplace one.
But what has that to do?
Ask yourself, then, why he gained this interest in the foreign woman.
In Gladia? I asked him, and he told me. She reminded me of you, and the resemblance is indeed distinct.
And when you told me this earlier, I was amused and asked if you believed him. I ask again, do you believe him?
Why shouldn't I believe him?
Because it's not true. The resemblance may have attracted his attention, but the real key to his interest is that the foreign woman is foreign. She had been brought up in Solaria, under assumptions and social axioms not like those on Aurora. He could therefore study a brain that was differently molded from ours, and could gain an interesting perspective. Don't you understand that?
For that matter, why is he interested in you, Earthman? Is he silly enough to imagine that you can solve an Auroran problem when you know nothing about Aurora?
Daniil suddenly intervened again, and Bailey started at the sound of the other's voice. Daniil said,
Dr. Vasilia, partner Elijah solved a problem on Solaria, though he knew nothing of Solaria.
Yes, said Vasilia sourly. So all the world's noted on that hyperwave program, and lightning may strike too, but I don't think that Han Fastolf is confident it will strike twice in the same place in rapid succession. No, Earthman, he was attracted to you in the first place because you are an Earthman. You possess another alien brain he can study and manipulate.
Surely you cannot believe, Dr. Vasilia, that he would risk matters of vital importance to Aurora and call in someone he knew to be useless merely to study an unusual brain.
Of course he would. Isn't that the whole point of what I am telling you? There is no crisis that could face Aurora that he would believe for a single moment to be as important as solving the problem of the brain. I can tell you exactly what he would say if you were to ask him. Aurora might rise or fall, flourish or decay, and that would all be of little concern compared to the problem of the brain, for if human beings really understood the brain, all that might have been lost in the course of a millennium of neglect or wrong decisions would be regained in a decade of cleverly directed human development guided by his dream of psycho-history. He would use the same argument to justify anything, lies, cruelty, anything, by merely saying that it is all intended to serve the purpose of advancing the knowledge of the brain.
I can't imagine that Dr. Fastolf would be cruel. He is the gentlest of men.
Is he? How long have you been with him?
Bailey said, a few hours on Earth 3 years ago, a day now here on Aurora.
A whole day, a whole day. I was with him for 30 years, almost constantly, and I have followed his career from a distance with some attention ever since. And you have been with him a whole day, Earthman? Well, on that one day, has he done nothing that frightened or humiliated you?
Bailey kept silent. He thought of the sudden attack with the Spicer from which Daniil had rescued him, of the personal that presented him with such difficulty, thanks to its masked nature, the extended walk outside designed to test his ability to adapt to the open.
Vasilia said, I see he did. Your face, Earthman, is not quite the mask of disguise you may think it is. Did he threaten you with a psychic probe?
Bailey said, it was mentioned.
One day, and it was already mentioned. I assume it made you feel uneasy?
It did.
And that there was no reason to mention it?
Oh, but there was, said Bailey quickly.
I had said that for a moment I had a thought which I then lost, and it was certainly legitimate to suggest that a psychic probe might help me relocate that thought.
Vasilia said, "No, it wasn't. The psychic probe cannot be used with sufficient delicacy of touch for that, and if it were attempted, the chances would be considerable that there would be permanent brain damage."
"Surely not if it were wielded by an expert, by Dr. Fastolf, for instance."
"By him? He doesn't know one end of the probe from the other. He is a theoretician, not a technician."
"By someone else, then. He did not, in actual fact, specify himself."
"No, Earthman, by no one. Think, think. If the psychic probe could be used on human beings safely by anyone, and if Han Fastolf were so concerned about the problem of the inactivation of the robot, then why didn't he suggest the psychic probe be used on himself?"
"On himself?
Don't tell me this hasn't occurred to you. Any thinking person would come to the conclusion that Fastolf is guilty.
The only point in favor of his innocence is that he himself insists he is innocent. Well, then, why does he not offer to prove his innocence by being psychically probed and showing that no trace of guilt can be dredged up from the recesses of his brain? Has he suggested such a thing, Earthman?"
"No, he hasn't, at least not to me."
"Because he knows very well that it is deadly dangerous. Yet he does not hesitate to suggest it in your case, merely to observe how your brain works under pressure, how you react to fright. Or perhaps it occurs to him that however dangerous the probe is to you, it may come up with some interesting data for him, as far as the details of your earth-molded brain are concerned. Tell me, then, isn't that cruel?"
Bailey brushed it aside with a tight gesture of his right arm. "How does this apply to the actual case, to the roboticide?"
The Solarian woman, Gladia, caught my one-time father's eye. She had an interesting brain for his purposes. He therefore gave her the robot, Jander, to see what would happen if a woman not raised on Aurora were faced with a robot that seemed human in every particular. He knew that an Auroran woman would very likely make use of the robot for sex immediately and have no trouble doing so. I myself would have some trouble, I admit, because I was not brought up normally, but no ordinary Auroran would. The Solarian woman, on the other hand, would have a great deal of trouble because she was brought up on an extremely robotic world and had unusually rigid mental attitudes toward robots. The difference, you see, might be very instructive to my father, who tried out of these variations to build his theory of brain functioning. Han Fastolf waited half a year for the Solarian woman to get to the point where she could perhaps begin making the first experimental approaches.
Bailey interrupted. "Your father knew nothing at all about the relationship between Gladia and Jander."
"Who told you that, Earthman? My father? Gladia? If the former, he was naturally lying. If the latter, she simply didn't know, very likely." "You may be sure Fastolf knew what was going on. He had to. For it must have been part of his study of how a human brain was bent under Solarian conditions. And then he thought, and I am as sure of this as I would be if I could read his thoughts. What would happen now, at the point where the woman is just beginning to rely on Jander, if suddenly, without reason, she lost him? He knew what an Auroran woman would do. She would feel some disappointment and then seek out some substitute. But what would a Solarian woman do? So he arranged to put Jander out of commission."
"Destroy an immensely valuable robot just to satisfy a trivial curiosity?"
"Monstrous, isn't it? But that's what Han Fastolf would do. So go back to him, Earthman, and tell him that his little game is over. If the planet generally doesn't believe him to be guilty now, they most certainly will after I have had my say."
43. For a long moment, Bailey sat there, stunned, while Vasilia looked at him with a kind of grim delight, her face looking harsh and totally unlike that of Gladia. There seemed nothing to do. Bailey got to his feet, feeling old, much older than his 45 standard years, a child's age to these Aurorans. So far, everything he had done had led to nothing, to worse than nothing, for at every one of his moves, the ropes seemed to tighten about Fastolf. He looked upward at the transparent ceiling. The sun was quite high, but perhaps it had passed its zenith, as it was dimmer than ever. Lines of thin clouds obscured it intermittently. Vasilia seemed to become aware of this from his upward glance. Her arm moved on the section of the long bench near which she was sitting, and the transparency of the ceiling vanished. At the same time, a brilliant light suffused the room, bearing the same faint orange tinge that the sun itself had. She said, "I think the interview is over.
I shall have no reason to see you again, Earthman, or you, me. Perhaps you had better leave Aurora. You have done, she smiled humorlessly, and said the next words almost savagely, my father, enough damage, though scarcely as much as he deserves. Bailey took a step toward the door, and his two robots closed in on him. Giscard said in a low voice, are you well, sir? Bailey shrugged. What was there to answer to that? Vasilia called out, Giscard, when Dr. Fastolf finds he has no further use for you, come join my staff? Giscard looked at her calmly. If Dr. Fastolf permits, I will do so, little miss. Her smile grew warm. Please do so, Giscard. I've never stopped missing you. I often think of you, little miss. Bailey turned at the door. Dr. Vasilia, would you have a personal I might use? Vasilia's eyes widened. Of course not, Earthman. There are community personals here and there at the Institute. Your robots should be able to guide you. He stared at her and shook his head. It was not surprising that she wanted no Earthman infecting her rooms, and yet it angered him just the same. He said out of anger rather than out of any rational judgment, Dr. Vasilia, I would not, were I you, speak of the guilt of Dr. Fastolf. What is there to stop me? The danger of the general uncovering of your dealings with Grimianus. The danger to you. Don't be ridiculous. You have admitted there was no conspiracy between myself and Grimianus. Not really. I agreed there seemed reason to conclude there was no direct conspiracy between you and Grimianus to destroy Jander. There remains the possibility of an indirect conspiracy. You are mad. What is an indirect conspiracy? I am not ready to discuss that in front of Dr. Fastolf's robots, unless you insist. And why should you? You know very well what I mean. There was no reason why Bailey should think she would accept this bluff. It might simply worsen the situation still further, but it didn't. Vasilia seemed to shrink within herself, frowning. Bailey thought, there is, then, an indirect conspiracy, whatever it might be, and this might hold her till she sees through my bluff. Bailey said, his spirits rising a little, I repeat, say nothing about Dr. Fastolf. But of course he didn't know how much time he had bought. Perhaps very little.